ॐ विज्ञानचमिनन्दस्य जनाञ्जनश्लोकया चक्षुसंवृतं येन तस्मै श्रीहृवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टं स्थपितं येन भूतले सायं रूपकदामायं ददति सापनदिकम् वंशकपतुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभयेव च प्रतिष्ठनं पवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. प्रह्लाद was preaching to his school friends, converting them to devotees, not exactly converting, because converting means changing from one thing to another, but Jivera Srupai Krishna Nityadas, everyone is already a devotee. It's just a matter of unobstructing the devotion. So Prahlad had preached to his school friends, and they had rejected the teachings of Sandanamarka, their materialistic teachers, and they had accepted the instructions of Prahlad Maharaj. Sandanamarka, the two teachers, went to Hiranyakashipu to complain, and Hiranyakashipu was furious. And although Prahlad was such a young boy, Hiranyakashipu rebuked him, chastised him so strongly, staring at him with crooked eyes due to his anger. We'll begin reading from text 5 in chapter 8, canto 7. Sri Hiranyakashipu Uvacha. Notice Sri Hiranyakashipu. He's speaking. He dorvanita mandatman kula veda karadama stavam mach chasanod vritam neshe tvadya yama chayam. Hiranyakashipu said, O most impudent, most unintelligent disruptor of the family, Durvanita, most impudent, Manda Atman, O stupid fool, Kula Bedakara, who are bringing about the destruction in the family, Adhama, O lowest of mankind, Stabdham, most obstinate, Matshashana, for my ruling, Udvritam Neshe, Udvritam, you are going astray from my orders, my ruling. Neshe twa adya, I shall bring you adya today, yama chayam, to the place of Yamaraj, the superintendent of death. I will kill you. Prabhupada's translation, almost impudent, most unintelligent disruptor of the family, O lowest of mankind. You have violated my power to rule you, and therefore you are an obstinate fool. Today I shall send you to the place of Yamaraj. We read from Prabhupada's purport. Hiranyakashipu condemned his Vaishnava son Prahlad for being durvanita, ungentle, uncivilized, or impudent. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has derived the meaning from this word durvanita by the mercy of the goddess of learning, Saraswati. So, what does sometimes the acharyas, they give a meaning when someone is criticizing Krishna or his devotee. The acharyas will take that criticism by the mercy of the goddess of learning and turn it around to mean, to show how they're actually, not by their own will, but by the mercy of the goddess of learning, actually glorifying that person. So, durvanita means most impudent, But by the mercy of the goddess of fortune, goddess Saraswati, the goddess of learning, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will reveal the actual glorification of Prahlad that is being said. So this, he'll go through all the words in this way, practically speaking. He says, "Du refers to the material world." This is confirmed by Lord Krishna in his instructions in Bhagavad Gita that this material world is dukkhalayam, full of material condition. Vi means vishesha, specifically. And nitta means brought in. By the mercy of the Supreme Lord, Prahlad Maharaj was especially brought to this material world to teach people how to get out of the material condition. So that's an alternative, glorious, by the mercy of the goddess of learning, Saraswati. That's a meaning of the word Durvanita. Brought into this material world specifically to teach us how to get out by faithfully, continuously remembering Krishna with a pure and simple heart. When the entire Lord Krishna says, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata, when the entire population or part of it becomes forgetful of its own duty, Krishna comes. When Krishna is not present, the devotee is present. But the mission is the same, to free the poor conditioned souls from the clutches of the Maya that chastises them. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur further explains that the word mandatman means manda, very bad or very slow in spiritual realization. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.10, manda sumanda matayo manda bhagya upadruta. Prahlad Maharaj is the guide of all the mandas, or bad living entities who are under the influence of Maya. He is the benefactor even of the slow and bad living entities in the material world, in this material world. So he's everyone's leader. Kula Beda Karadhama, according to Haranyakashipu's thoughts, means one who brings about destruction or disruption in the family. So here is the meaning by the mercy of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and the goddess Saraswati. By his actions, Prahlad Maharaj made great personalities who established big families seem insignificant. Everyone is interested in his own family and in making his dynasty famous. But Prahlad Maharaj was so liberal that he made no distinction between one living entity and another. Therefore, he was greater than the great Prajapatis who established their dynasties. The word stubdha means obstinate. A devotee does not care for the instructions of the asuras. When they give instructions, he remains silent. A devotee cares about the instructions of Krishna, not those of the demons or non-devotees. He does not give any respect to a demon, even though the demon be his father. Mat chanaso divritam. Prahlad Maharaj was disobedient to the orders of his demoniac father. Yamachayam. Every conditioned soul is under the control of Yamaraj. But Hiranyakashipu said that he considered Prahlad Maharaj his deliverer, his own deliverer. For Prahlad Maharaj would stop Hiranyakashipu's repetition of birth and death. Because Prahlad Maharaj, being a great devotee, was better than any yogi, Hiranyakashipu was to be brought among the society of bhakti yogis. Thus Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has explained these words in a very interesting way, as they can be interpreted from the side of Saraswati, the mother of learning. Text 6. My son Prahlad, you rascal, you know that when I am angry, the planets of the three worlds tremble along with their chief rulers. By whose power has a rascal like you become so impudent that you appear fearless and overstep my power to rule you? Prabhupada's purport. By whose power? the relationship between a pure devotee and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is extremely relishable. A devotee never claims to be very powerful himself. Instead, he fully surrenders to the lotus feet of Krishna, being confident that in all dangerous conditions, Krishna will protect his devotee. Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. O son of Kunti, declare boldly that my devotee never perishes. The Lord requested Arjuna to declare this instead of declaring himself, because sometimes Krishna changes his view and therefore people might not believe him. Thus Krishna asked Arjuna to declare that a devotee of the Lord is never vanquished. In the Bhagavatam it describes, also in the Mahabharata, how Krishna had promised not to take part in the battle of Kurukshetra. When Duryodhana, Duryodhana had chosen Krishna's armies, leaving Arjuna to have Krishna not participating in the battle, Duryodhana was happy because he had the armies, the extra manpower, and Arjuna was happy because he had Krishna. So Krishna had promised to not take part in the battle, but yet when Bhishma had been tricked by Duryodhana to fight so heavily with the Pandavas, Bhishma had promised that he would force Krishna to take up weapons, even though Krishna had promised not to, because he would threaten Arjuna's life so heavily. So in the next day in the battle, Bhishma indeed fought so heavily, Arjuna was in trouble, and Bhishma was about to kill him. And Krishna picked up a wheel of the chariot that had fallen off one of the destroyed chariots, and he rushed towards Bhishma to kill him, his cloth slipping from his body. He picked up a weapon. He broke his own promise to protect his devotee. So Prabhupada's purport makes the point, or Prabhupada makes the point, that Krishna sometimes may break his promise. So therefore, if Krishna promises to protect his devotee, someone may say, well, Krishna breaks his promise sometime. So therefore, Krishna did not declare himself that he always protects his devotee, but he had his devotee, Arjuna, declare it, Kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. Thus Krishna, as Prabhupada explains, asked Arjuna to declare that a devotee of the Lord is never vanquished. And Bhishma Dev, and this is described, if you remember, in the 8th chapter of the 1st canto. 8th or 9th? 9th chapter of the first canto, how Bhishma, he's remembering at the point of his death, he's remembering that image of Krishna rushing towards him like a lion rushes towards an elephant to kill him. So Bhishma is the elephant and Krishna is the lion. And he's relishing that view of Krishna, the anger that Krishna has. He's so beautiful in his mood to protect his devotee. And Bhishma is meditating upon that, even though Krishna was rushing to kill him. But it was the most wonderful, glorious thing for Bhishma to do that. Continuing with Prabhupada's purport. Hiranyakashipu was perplexed about how his 5-year-old boy could be so fearless that he did not care for the order of his very great and powerful father. A devotee cannot execute the order of anyone except the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the position of a devotee. Hiranyakashipu could understand that this boy must have been very powerful, since the boy did not heed his orders. Because Prahlad was standing in front of him. The whole universe was trembling. The demigods were afraid in offering, making gifts of offerings. Even Narada Muni was subservient to Hiranyakashipu. And here, 5-year-old Prahlad did not tremble. He did not quiver. He was not disturbed. He was fully peaceful, fully fearless, fully confident. Hiranyakashipu was thinking. He asked his son, Kimbala, where, how have you overcome my order? By whose strength have you done this? Who is the one backing you? That's like a young boy. He may challenge in fighting and may be fearless to challenge someone much older than him if he knows his big brother is right there by him, with him, backing him up. So who is backing Prahlad up, he wants to know. That's giving him his strength, his fearlessness, his courage. Who are you relying on behind you? Kimbala, where are you getting this strength from? Now here's Prahlad's reply. My dear king, the source of my strength, of which you are asking, is also the source of yours. Indeed, the original source of all kinds of strength is one. He is not only your strength or mine, but the only strength for everyone. Without him, capital H, Krishna, no one can get any strength. Whether moving or not moving, superior or inferior, everyone, including Lord Brahma, is controlled by the strength of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the supreme controller and time factor, is the power of the senses, the power of the mind, the power of the body, and the vital force of the senses. His influence is unlimited. He is the best of all living entities, the controller of the three modes of material nature. By his own power, he creates the cosmic manifestation, maintains it, and annihilates it also. Glorifying God, Krishna, the Lord, directly before Hiranyakashipu. Prabhupada's purport to text 7. In the Bhagavad Gita 10:41, Krishna says, Yad yad vibhuti mat satvam shri madur jitame vava Tattadeva bhagatchatam mamatejo angsa sambhava. Know that all beautiful, glorious, and mighty creations spring from but a spark of my splendor. This is confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj. If one sees extraordinary strength or power anywhere, it is derived from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To give an example, there are different grades of fire, but all of them derive heat and light from the sun. Similarly, all living entities, big or small, are dependent on the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One's only duty is to surrender, for one is a servant and cannot independently attain the position of master. One can attain the position of master only by the mercy of the master, not independently. Unless one understands this philosophy, he is still a mudha. In other words, he is not very intelligent. The mudhas, the asses, who do not have this intelligence, cannot surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Understanding the subordinate position of the living entity takes millions of births. But when one is actually wise, he surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 7:19, Bahunam janamam mante jnanavam mam prapadyante vasudeva savamiti samahatma sadolabha. After many births and deaths, he who is actually in knowledge surrenders unto me, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is. Such a great soul is very rare. Prahlad Maharaj was a great soul, a mahatma, and therefore he completely surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord. He was confident that Krishna would give him protection under all circumstances. Text 9, and we'll read the verse of 10 as well, and then we'll read the book. Prahlad Maharaj continued, so he's saying to his father, you know who the source of my strength is, who's giving me the power to resist you and not to be in any anxiety, who's giving me full confidence, fearlessness. That person is the same person who is giving you your strength. Now, he continues, my dear father, please give up your demoniac mentality. Do not discriminate in your heart between enemies and friends. Make your mind equipoised towards everyone, except for the uncontrolled and misguided mind. There is no enemy within this world. When one sees everyone on the platform of equality, one then comes to the position of worshipping the Lord perfectly. In former times, there were many fools like you who did not conquer the six enemies that steal away the wealth of the body. These fools were very proud, thinking, I've conquered all enemies in all the 10 directions. But if a person is victorious over the six enemies and is equipoised towards all living entities, for him, there are no enemies. Enemies are merely imagined by one in ignorance. We'll read the purports first of 9 and then 10. So he's saying, you're thinking I'm your enemy, you're thinking Vishnu is your enemy. Give up this concept. And until one does that, one cannot properly worship the Lord. One should recognize who one's enemies actually are, Prahlad says. And there's only one actual enemy, and that's the mind. And when one controls that enemy, then and only then he can actually worship the Lord. Prabhupada's purport. Unless one is able to fix the mind at the lotus feet of the Lord, the mind is impossible to control. As Arjuna says in Bhagavad Gita 6:34, Chanchalam hi mana Krishna pramati bala dridam tasyaham nigraham manye vairiva sudashkaram. For the mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate, and very strong, O Krishna. And to subdue it seems to me, is more difficult than controlling the wind. The only bona fide process for controlling the mind is to fix the mind by service to the Lord. We create enemies and friends according to the dictation of the mind, but actually there are no enemies and friends. Pandita Samadarshana Samasaveshu Bhuteshu Madbhaktim Labhate Param. To understand this is the preliminary condition for entering into the kingdom of devotional service. In this material world, this is the purport 2:10, Prabhupada's purport. In this material world, everyone thinks that he has conquered his enemies, not understanding that his enemies are his uncontrolled mind and five senses, manashashtanindriyani, prakritistani, karchati. In this material world, everyone has become a servant of the senses. Originally, everyone is a servant of Krishna. But in ignorance, one forgets this, and thus one is engaged in the service of maya, through lusty desires, anger, greed, illusion, madness, and jealousy. Everyone is actually dependent on the reactions of material laws, but still one thinks himself independent and thinks that he has conquered all directions. In conclusion, one who thinks that he has many enemies is an ignorant man, whereas one who is in Krishna consciousness knows there are no enemies but those within oneself, the uncontrolled mind and senses. Such important, powerful verses and purports pointing to where the enemy actually is. Because the mind's business is to attach itself and unattach itself, to accept something. It grasps something, wants it, identifies with it. And then it rejects something. It can accept one thing 1 minute and reject that very same thing 3 seconds later. That which it's attracted to can be repulsed with. And the mind, when it is untrained, uncontrolled, and whimsical, is so dangerous because it can become attached to something that means our death. Attached to that, what that means, death. And we see this, and it doesn't sound, it may sound foolish. Why would someone's mind become attached? But it happens all the time. Continuously, all the time. The mind wants something. And it becomes so powerful because it's uncontrolled. And then the intelligence just simply runs behind making up a plan how the mind can attain that thing. When the mind is uncontrolled, it's so dangerous. It can drink poison. Knowingly. When one wants something, one doesn't care what the consequences are. Despite the cigarette package saying the cigarette is going to kill you, give you heart disease and lung cancer and this and that, still people are smoking. Why? Because they want to. People do horrible things. Why? Because they feel like it. They kill another person. Why? Because they're angry at them. They hate them. This is all the mind. Six enemies. The mind, the five senses. Six enemies. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness. Like that. But the enemies are all within. And when someone stands in the way of our sense gratification in some way or another, does something that we don't like, the mind grasps that person, assimilates him like an amoeba. Assimilates, grasps something, and it puts him in the category, you are enemy. And then when one is angry enough, even one may love the person 1 minute, could kill him the next. This is the mind. So it's really important to recognize where the problem actually lies. Remember who Prahlad is preaching in this way too. He's talking to Hiranyakashipu, who is the personification of a demonic mind who wants to control the universe. He's not satisfied with controlling a planet even. He's controlling the entire universe. He doesn't want to kill just an ordinary person. He wants to kill Vishnu, God. What a mind. Prahlad is preaching to him very straight, simple, no anxiety. Hiranyakashipu replies, "You rascal, you are trying to minimize my value as if you were better than me at controlling the senses. This is over-intelligent. I can therefore understand that you desire to die at my hands, for this kind of nonsensical talk is indulged in by those about to die." From Prabhupada's purport, about halfway down. A father does not like to be instructed by his son, especially if the father is a demon. Prahlad Maharaj's Vaishnava preaching to his demoniac father was indirectly effective. For because of Hiranyakashipu's excessive jealousy of Krishna and his devotee, he was inviting the Sringadev to kill him very quickly. Actually, Hiranyakashipu was envious of Prahlad. He could not tolerate the fact that Prahlad had more power than him and was defying his power. He wanted to see himself as the all-powerful controller. So when Prahlad was demonstrating his own power in this very, very simple Vaishnava way, by being obedient only to Krishna and being fearless, Hiranyakashipu became envious of him and wanted to kill him. Thus, by becoming angry at Prahlad, Prahlad was helping him in the sense that he was inviting Nrisingadev to kill him. Well, not Prahlad was, but he himself, Hiranyakashipu, was. Thus he was expediting his being killed by the Lord himself. Although Hiranyakashipu was a demon, he is described here by the added word Sri. And we heard this in the previous time when Sri Hiranyakashipu spoke also here in this verse, Sri Hiranyakashipu Uvacha. Why is he called Sri? Sri means opulent or beautiful. It's such a respected title. Why is he called Sri? The answer is that fortunately he had such a great devotee son as Prahlad Maharaj. Thus, although he was a demon, he would attain salvation and return home back to Godhead. Hiranyakashipu, in his anger, continues. Yas twaya manda bhagyukto. Manda bhagyukto. Manda mad anyo jagadishara. Kvacho yadi sasarvatra chamat stambe na dushyate. O most unfortunate Prahlad, you have always described a supreme being other than me, a supreme being who is above everything, who is the controller of everyone, who is all-pervading. But where is he? There is Hiranyakashipu standing right in front of Prahlad, threatening to kill him, saying, you're always talking about a supreme person above everyone else, but where is he? If he's everywhere, then why is he not present before me in this pillar? Because, if we go back to text 55 in the previous chapter, the last verse of the previous chapter, when Prahlad was preaching to his school friends in the final verse, he said, Etavaneva lokesmin pumsaswata parasmita ekanta bhakti govinda yatsavatra tarikshanam. In this material world, to render service to the lotus feet of Govinda, the cause of all causes, and to see him everywhere is the only goal of life. This much alone is the ultimate goal of human life, as explained by all the revealed scriptures. To see him everywhere, to see Krishna everywhere. Prahlad is telling his school friends that Krishna is everywhere, and Hiranyakashipu is saying, if he is everywhere, then why isn't he here in this pillar? Because you are speaking, I'll read the verses, and then we'll go back and read the purports. Because you are speaking so much nonsense, your God is everywhere. Because you are speaking so much nonsense, I shall now sever your head from your body. Now let me see your most worshipable God come to protect you. I want to see it. Being obsessed with anger, Hiranyakashipu, who was very great in bodily strength, thus chastised his exalted devotee son, Prahlad, with harsh words. Cursing him again and again, Hiranyakashipu took up his sword, got up from his royal throne, and with great anger struck his fist against the column. He was saying, if your God is everywhere, he's in this pillar, I don't see him. He struck his fist against the pillar to show his own strength. I'm crushing this pillar. I'm crushing your God. Then, from within the pillar, came a fearful sound, which appeared to crack the covering of the universe. Oh, my dear Yudhisthira, Narada Muni says, this sound reached even the abodes of the demigods like Lord Brahma. And when the demigods heard it, they thought, oh, now our planets are being destroyed. Hiranyakashipu became fearful when he heard the thundering sound that came from the pillar. was showing his extraordinary prowess. Hiranyakashipu, who desired to kill his own son, heard that wonderful tumultuous sound which had never been heard before, Upon hearing that the sound, the other leaders of the demons became afraid. None of them could find the origin of that sound in the assembly. They began searching everywhere for the source of that sound. To prove that the statement of his servant Prahlad Maharaj was substantial, in other words, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even within the pillar of an assembly hall, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, exhibited a wonderful form never seen before. The form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in the assembly hall. He is everywhere, but yet he is a person. Although he is everywhere, it does not mean that he is not a person. If he is everywhere, one would think that he is nowhere specifically and he is unlimited. So how could something that's nowhere specifically and unlimited have a form? But yet, Krishna has inconceivable power. And although he is everywhere, he has a form. And here, he is appearing in his wonderful form as half lion, half man, as Lord Nrisingadev. I'll read Prabhupada's purport here. No, I'll continue reading. While Hiranyakashipu looked all around to find the source of the sound, that wonderful form of the Lord, which could not be ascertained to be either man or lion, emerged from the pillar. In amazement, Hiranyakashipu wondered, "What is this creature that is half man and half lion?" Hiranyakashipu studied the form of the Lord, who had burst from the pillar, Lord Nrisingadev. Nara, man, Singha, lion. He studied the form of the Lord, trying to decide who the form of Nrisingadev standing before him was. The Lord's form was extremely fearsome because of his angry eyes, which resembled molten gold, his shining mane, which expanded the dimensions of his fearful face, his deadly teeth, and his razor-sharp tongue, which moved about like a dueling sword. His ears were erect and motionless, and his nostrils and gaping mouth appeared like caves of a mountain. His jaws parted fearfully, and his entire body touched the sky. His neck was very short and thick, his chest broad, his waist thin, and the hairs on his body as white as the rays of the moon. His arms, which resembled flanks of soldiers, spread in all directions as he killed the demons, rogues, and atheists with his conch shell, disc, club, lotus, and other natural weapons. Hiranyakashipu murmured to himself, "Lord Vishnu, who possesses great mystic power, has made this plan to kill me. But what is the use of such an attempt? Who can fight with me?" Thinking like this, and taking up his club, Hiranyakashipu attacked the Lord like an elephant. Just as a small insect falls forcefully into a fire and the insignificant creature becomes invisible, when Hiranyakashipu attacked the Lord who was full of effulgence, Hiranyakashipu became invisible. This is not at all astonishing, for the Lord is always situated in pure goodness. Formerly, during creation, he entered the dark universe and illuminated it by his spiritual effulgence. Thereafter, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, who was extremely angry, swiftly attacked Nrisingadev with his club and began to beat him. Lord Nrisingadev, however, captured the great demon along with his club, just as Garuda might capture a great snake. O Yudhisthira, O great son of Bharata, when Lord Nrisingadev gave Hiranyakashipu a chance to slip from his hand, just as Garuda sometimes plays with a snake and lets it slip from his mouth, The demigods who had lost their abodes and who were hiding behind the clouds for fear of the demon did not consider that incident very good. Indeed, they were very perturbed. When Hiranyakashipu was freed from the hands of Nrisingadev, he falsely thought that the Lord was afraid of his prowess. Therefore, after taking a little rest from the fight, he took up his sword and shield and again attacked the Lord with great force. Making a loud, shrill sound of laughter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, who was extremely strong and powerful, captured Hiranyakashipu, who was protecting himself with his sword and shield, leaving no gaps open. With the speed of a hawk, Hiranyakashipu moved sometimes in the sky and sometimes on the earth. His eyes closed because of fear of Nrisingadev's laughter. As a snake captures a mouse or Garuda captures a very venomous snake, Lord Nrisingadev captured Hiranyakashipu, who could not be pierced even by the thunderbolt of King Indra. As Hiranyakashipu moved his limbs here, there, and all around, very much afflicted at being captured, Lord Nrisingadev placed the demon on his lap, supporting him with his thighs. And in the doorway of the assembly hall, the Lord very easily tore the demon to pieces with the nails of his hand. Lord Nrisingadev's mouth and mane were sprinkled with drops of blood, and his fierce eyes, full of anger, were impossible to look at. Licking the edge of his mouth with his tongue, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nrisingadev, decorated with a garland of intestines taken from Hiranyakashipu's abdomen, resembled a lion that has just killed an elephant. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had many, many arms, first uprooted Hiranyakashipu's heart and then threw him aside and turned towards the demoniac soldiers. These soldiers had come in thousands to fight with him with raised weapons and were very faithful followers of Hiranyakashipu. But Lord Nrisingadev killed all of them merely with the ends of his nails. The hair on Nrisingadev's head shook the clouds and scattered them here and there. His glaring eyes stole the effulgence of the luminaries in the sky, and his breathing agitated the seas and oceans. Because of his roaring, all the elephants in the world began to cry in fear. Aeroplanes were thrown into outer space and the upper planetary system by the hair of Nrisingadev's head. Because of the pressure of the Lord's lotus feet, the earth appeared to slip from its position, and all the hills and mountains sprang up due to his intolerable force. Because of the Lord's bodily effulgence, both the sky and all directions diminished in their natural illumination. Manifesting a full effulgence and a fearsome countenance, Lord Nrisingadev, being very angry and finding no contestant to face his power and opulence, then sat down in the assembly hall on the excellent throne of the king. Because of fear and obedience, no one could come forward to serve the Lord directly. Hiranyakashipu had been exactly like a fever of meningitis in the head of the three worlds, so deadly. Thus, when the wives of the demigods and the heavenly planets saw that the great demon had been killed by the personal hands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their faces blossomed in great joy. The wives of the demigods again and again showered flowers from heaven upon Lord Nrisingadev like rain. At that time, the aeroplanes of the demigods who desired to see the activities of the Supreme Lord Narayan crowded the sky. The demigods began beating drums and kettle drums, and upon hearing them, the angelic women began to dance, while the chiefs of the Gandharvas sang sweetly. Lord Nrisingadev ki jai. Maybe we can read a few of the purports. We'll start from where the action we left off, where the action was getting very intense. Hiranyakashipu was so powerful, everyone was terrified of him. But Lord Nisringadev ripped him to pieces so effortlessly. He had all the weapons, all the power, all the benedictions. But he was envious of the Lord and he challenged the Lord. And he was ripped apart despite everything that he possessed. All his calculations on how he was going to live eternally failed. So Hiranyakashipu had said to Prahlad, while he still had life within his body, he said, "Oh, most unfortunate Prahlad." He was thinking Prahlad, and Prabhupada explains his purport. He was thinking Prahlad was unfortunate because he thought that he was going to kill his son now, and he was the master of the universe, and Prahlad would not be able to inherit his property. So he was thinking Prahlad so unfortunate, and Prahlad on the other hand was actually the most fortunate because he was fully under the protection of Lord Nisringadev. Hiranyakashipu said, "Where is he, your all-pervading God that you always speak of, that's everywhere, so superior even to me? Where is he? Why is he not present before me in this pillar? Is he everywhere?" Here's Prabhupada's purport. Demons sometimes declare to a devotee that they cannot accept the existence of God because they cannot see him. But what the demon does not know is stated by the Lord himself in the Bhagavad Gita 7:25. Naham prakasya savasya yoga maya samavrita. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by yoga maya. The Lord is open to being seen by devotees, but non-devotees cannot see him. The qualification for seeing God is stated in Brahma Samhita 5:38, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena Shantasa Daiva Ridayeshu Valokayanti. A devotee who has developed a genuine love for Krishna can always see him everywhere, whereas a demon, not having a clear understanding of the Supreme Lord, cannot see him. So the devotee, due to his love, sees Krishna everywhere. There is no place he looks where he doesn't see him. And a demon, on the other hand, because he has no love for Krishna, because he has enmity with Krishna, because he's envious, wherever he looks, he doesn't see him. Exactly the opposite, night and day. When Hiranyakashipu was threatening to kill Prahlad Maharaj, Prabhupada continues, Prahlad certainly saw the column standing before him and his father. And he saw that the Lord was present in the pillar to encourage him not to fear his demoniac father's words. The Lord was present to protect him. Hiranyakashipu mocked Prahlad's observation and asked him, "Where is your God?" Prahlad Maharaj replied, "He is everywhere." Then Hiranyakashipu asked, "Why is he not in this pillar before me?" Thus, in all circumstances, the devotee can always see the Supreme Lord, whereas the non-devotee cannot. Hiranyakashipu continued, "Because you are speaking so much nonsense, I shall now sever your head from your body. Now let me see your most worshipable God come to protect you. I want to see it." Prabhupada's purport. Demons always think that the God of the devotees is fictitious. They think there is no God, and that the so-called religious feeling of devotion to God is but an opiate, a kind of illusion, like the illusions derived from LSD and opium. Hiranyakashipu did not believe Prahlad Maharaj when Prahlad asserted that his Lord is present everywhere, because Hiranyakashipu, as a typical demon, was convinced there is no God and that no one could protect Prahlad. He felt encouraged to kill his son. He challenged the idea that the devotee is always protected by the Supreme Lord. And then, with great anger, he, after drawing his sword, Hiranyakashipu struck his fist against the column. And then there was an incredible, fearful sound. Thundering. And Hiranyakashipu heard this. And even the demigods heard it. They thought that everything, the planets, are being destroyed. He heard that sound, which had never been heard before, and everyone became afraid, and they could not discover where that sound came from. Text 17 again. To prove that the statement of his servant, Prahlad Maharaj, was substantial, in other words, to prove that the Supreme Lord is present everywhere, even with the pillar, within the pillar of an assembly hall, that he's a person everywhere and a person. The Supreme Personality of Godhead exhibited a wonderful form never seen, never before seen. The form was neither that of a man nor that of a lion. Thus the Lord appeared in his wonderful form in the assembly hall. Here is Prabhupada's purport. When Hiranyakashipu asked Prahlad Maharaj, "Where is your Lord? Is he present in this pillar?" Prahlad Maharaj fearlessly replied, "Yes, my Lord is present everywhere." Therefore, to convince Hiranyakashipu that the statement of Prahlad Maharaj was unmistakably true, the Lord appeared from the pillar. The Lord appeared as half lion and half man, so that Hiranyakashipu could not understand whether the great giant was a lion or a human being. To substantiate Prahlad's statement, the Lord proved that his devotee, as declared in Bhagavad Gita, is never vanquished. Kamteya pratijani hi name bhakta punashati. Prahlad Maharaj's demoniac father had repeatedly threatened to kill Prahlad, but Prahlad was confident that he could not be killed since he was protected by the Supreme Lord. By appearing from the pillar, the Lord encouraged his devotee, saying in effect, "Don't worry, I am present here." By manifesting his form as Nrisingadev, the Lord also preserved the truth of Lord Brahma's promise that Hiranyakashipu was not to be killed by any animal or any man. The Lord appeared in a form that could not be said to be fully a man or a lion. So Hiranyakashipu saw this incredible half lion, half man that emerged from the pillar. And he said, "What is this creature that is half man and half lion?" And we'll read from the end of Prabhupada's purport here to text 18. When Hiranyakashipu received benediction from Lord Brahma, he thought he was safe, since he received the benediction that he would not be killed either by an animal or by a human being. He never thought that an animal and human being would be combined so that the demons like him would be puzzled by such a form. This is the meaning of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's omnipotence. So the Lord rushed towards him like a lion rushes to kill an elephant, because if a lion is fighting with an elephant, it is the lion that is victorious. Thank you very much. We'll stop here. Krishna allows, we'll continue with some of the purports and later on the prayers. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Prahlad Maharaj ki jai, Lord Nisringadev ki jai, Sri Prabhupada ki jai.